Hello, and welcome to Learning English Weekend, the Sunday edition. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz in Washington. It's March 6th, 2016. It was on this day in 1946 that Vietnamese leader Ho Chi Minh signed an agreement with France that gave his country the power to govern itself. Now, here's what's ahead on today's program. On the Higher Education Report, we'll tell you what happened when rapper Kanye West went to the social media website Twitter and criticized the high cost of textbooks. Ana Mateo will be with us, as she is every Sunday, with Words and Their Stories. This week, she tells us how speakers of American English talk about the idea of everything. She'll tell us the meaning of such expressions as the whole nine yards and the whole shebang. And as we always do on the Sunday edition of Learning English Weekend, we will present The Making of a Nation. This week in our series, we report on Woodrow Wilson's first year as president, 1913. He showed the American people that they had elected a strong and effective leader by quickly gaining the support of Congress for some of the most important economic reforms in the country's history. So you can see, as always, we have a lot for you today. Every day of the year, we bring you news from and about America and the world. And every Sunday, we tell you the often surprising and always interesting history of the United States. We're on the radio, on the web, and we come to you on a podcast. We are wherever you are. We're the voice of America. Rapper Kanye West recently complained on the social media website Twitter about the cost of textbooks. Education puts Americans into debt before they even get a chance to get started, he wrote. We have to lower the price of textbooks. The Bureau of Labor Statistics gathers information on labor and the American economy. It found that from January 1977 to June 2015, the cost of university textbooks increased by 1,024%. This increase is three times the rate of normal inflation. Pete Musto is here to tell us how one college responded to Kanye's tweet.
Within a few hours of West writing his comments on Twitter, Tidewater Community College in Hampton Roads, Virginia, responded. "We got you," the school wrote on its Twitter account. "The nation's first textbook-free degree." Tidewater began offering what it calls a Z degree in 2013. Z degree stands for zero textbooks. The two-year degree program provides students with an associate's degree in business administration. Students in the Z degree program do not have to pay for any of the required course materials. All of the required materials come from Open Educational Resources, or OER. OER are free educational materials anyone can use for any purpose. Creators of OER do not ask for a copyright or exclusive use of the content. Tidewater professor Linda Williams teaches several courses for the Z Degree program. She says that universities should be working to make education more available to everyone.
Knowledge and learning shouldn't be locked behind a paywall. Education is sharing. We learn from each other, and everybody should have that opportunity, not just those who can purchase a textbook.
The student public interest research groups, called Student PIRGs, are a group of nonprofit organizations that work with college students. Student PIRGs help students study and try to solve issues in higher education. Student PIRGs surveyed more than 5,000 college students about the cost of textbooks for a report called Covering the Cost. The report found that almost 30% of students surveyed spent financial aid on textbooks. The report also argued one of the main reasons for high prices is because five companies own 80% of the textbook publishing industry. With little competition, the companies can set the price at whatever they want. Marissa Bluestone is the Director of Communications for the American Association of Publishers, or AAP. She notes that the Student PIRGs report says its own research is unscientific. She also argues that the information from Student PIRGs and the BLS is unclear.
When they're measuring the cost of textbooks, they're looking at the traditional books. They're not including in their calculations the digital materials and the other options that students are using.
The College Board is a nonprofit organization concerned with higher education. They estimated that the budget for books and supplies at a four-year public university was $1,298 per year. Bluestone says this information does not show how much money students are actually spending. Digital copies, rentals, and used books are much cheaper. Cheaper options are the reason in 2015 the National Association of College Stores reported a six-year decrease in average annual spending, Bluestone says. David Anderson is the executive director for the AAP. He says that for-profit publishers work hard to reduce cost.
I don't know of any other participant in higher education that can claim that they're cutting their costs in half.
University of Maryland University College, or UMUC, is another school that uses OER to help its 84,000 students reduce costs. All of the school's undergraduate courses became textbook-free in fall 2015. Kara Van Dam is the vice provost at UMUC. She argues that the publishing industry does not do enough to help students.
Typically, the electronic versions are barely any cheaper than the hard copy versions. Where they are lower cost, they may be out-of-date editions. I respectfully disagree with the publishing industry's take on this, but I also recognize this is their entire business model. So it would be very threatening to have textbooks go out of style.
Both Williams and Van Dam suggest the quality of OER has greatly increased in recent years. They say that the faculty of their schools are experts in their subjects. As experts, the faculty can decide which materials meet the needs of their students and courses. Williams also says that the information in OER is more current. Faculty can update the materials when necessary. OpenStax College is a nonprofit organization that has been publishing OER since 2012 through Rice University. David Harris is the editor-in-chief of OpenStax College. Harris says that OpenStax works with other nonprofit organizations like the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation to create the best free content possible.
What we do is we peer review the materials by many, many reviewers. We work with professional development editors who make sure that the material is level appropriate.
Van Dam says there is nothing that makes regular textbooks better than OER.
There's nothing magical about a textbook. A textbook was put together by a publisher. The publisher hired a faculty member or multiple faculty member to write that textbook, and they sell it.
Van Dam and Williams agree students should not have to choose between costly textbooks and food. Williams also says using OER shows that universities are more than a place people go for information.
Is a university simply a collection of textbooks? I don't believe that at all. I believe that the university system provides much more than just content.
Harris says 20% of universities in the U.S. use at least one OpenStax free textbook. But Harris, Williams, and Van Dam all agree that the world of for-profit textbook publishing is not going away. I'm Pete Musto.
Thanks, Pete. Now, it's time for our popular weekly program, Words and Their Stories. Today, Ana Mateo tells us the many ways American English has to talk about everything under the sun.
Cradle to grave means an entire life cycle. A cradle is a bed for very young babies, and a grave is a burial place. So from cradle to grave means from birth to death. It could be used to describe something that happens over the course of a person's life. For example, I know a man who lived in the same country village his entire life, from cradle to grave. That is a literal use of the expression. This expression is often used in business, meaning the entire life cycle of a product or process. Here is an example.
Marcia is responsible for the life of this product from beginning to end.
In other words, she's in charge from cradle to grave.
Correct. Check with her before changing anything.
Another less common way to say cradle to grave is womb to tomb, but that one rhymes. If you like food expressions, you can use soup to nuts, or from beginning to end. A dinner may start with soup and end with nuts. For example, you could say, he explained the process to us, from soup to nuts, from beginning to end. Everything from A to Z uses the alphabet to give a range of everything. It describes content more than process. It means that nothing important was left out. For example, the rescue training covered everything from A to Z. The instructors taught everything you need to know for a successful rescue. Everything but the kitchen sink is an expression that means a person included a lot of stuff, maybe too much stuff. Let's say my friend is going camping for the weekend, and he packs too many things, things he won't possibly need, like an iron, a toaster, and a television. I could say he prepared for a weekend of camping and packed everything but the kitchen sink. We have many expressions that simply use the word whole to make fun phrases that mean everything. For example, we have the whole ball of wax. When you say the whole ball of wax, you mean everything. This expression may have come from a practice in the 1600s, where land was distributed in a sort of lottery. The amount of each portion of land was concealed in a ball of wax and then drawn from a hat. But no one knows for sure if this is the origin. The origin of the whole nine yards is even more mysterious. It could come from the military, sports, or even Scottish dress for men. If you like to use expressions with known origins, use the whole enchilada. An enchilada is a Mexican dish. Vegetables or meat fill a tortilla and is topped with a sauce. The whole enchilada means the entirety of something, especially something impressive or outstanding. For example, he has a job with money, respect, and personal satisfaction, the whole enchilada. The word shebang is also used this way. In fact, people used the whole shebang without knowing what a shebang actually is. Word historians do not agree on where shebang comes from either. One of the first recorded uses of the whole shebang, meaning everything, is in the late 1800s. If you like expressions that are fun to say, use the whole kit and caboodle. And that brings us to the end of this Words and Their Stories. I'm Ana Mateo. So tell me now that you got a
whole enchilada. Thanks, Anna. Now, as we do every Sunday, we present The Making of a Nation. Today, we take you back to 1913, the first year of Woodrow Wilson's presidency. Wilson showed the American people that they had elected a strong and effective leader. He moved quickly to fulfill his campaign promises. He won congressional approval for lower import taxes, a new tax on earnings, and restrictions on the power of big companies. These were some of the most important economic reforms in the country's history. Larry West and Maurice Joyce continue the story of the presidency of Woodrow Wilson.
Most of Woodrow Wilson's political victories were on national issues. He had little experience with international issues. But foreign events soon began to demand more and more of his time. With all of his successes at home, it is a surprising fact of history that his presidency is remembered best for its foreign policy. The story of Woodrow Wilson's foreign policy is full of high ideas and political bravery, but it also is a story of fierce struggle and lost hopes. It is a story that begins across America's southern border in Mexico.
At that time, Mexico had been ruled for many years by Porfirio Diaz. As Diaz grew older, his power began to weaken. In 1911, a revolt broke out. It was led by Francisco Madero, the leader of a land reform movement. Diaz understood he could not win. He resigned and fled the country. Madero declared himself president. However, powerful groups in Mexico opposed him. In a short time, one of his own generals, Victoriano Huerta, arrested him. Madero was murdered soon after Huerta seized power. President Wilson refused to recognize Huerta's government. He believed other forces would rise up against him. Wilson was right. Another revolt began, led by General Venustiano Carranza.
Wilson offered aid to Carranza. Carranza rejected the offer. He was afraid of American interference in Mexico. He told Wilson that Mexican troops would do all the fighting. He only wanted guns and ammunition. American forces did, however, get involved in the conflict. President Wilson learned that a ship from Germany was bringing supplies to the Huerta government. The ship would land at the Mexican port of Veracruz. Wilson ordered the United States Navy to seize and occupy the port. The move started a storm of criticism in the United States and throughout Latin America.
Many people denounced President Wilson. They called him an imperialist and a fool. They asked, what right did the United States have to interfere in Mexico? Wilson finally stopped American military action in Mexico. He tried to settle the dispute at an international conference at Niagara Falls, Canada. The effort failed. The conference did not produce a settlement. While the diplomats were talking, Carranza's revolutionary forces were fighting. They moved on Mexico City, the capital. President Huerta fled. Carranza formed a new government.
The new government began to split apart almost immediately. Another general, Francisco Pancho Villa, tried to seize power. He forced Carranza out of Mexico City. Then he formed his own government. President Wilson recognized Villa and his government. Carranza, however, refused to give up. Day by day, his army grew stronger. He forced Villa to retreat. Then President Wilson recognized Carranza's government. Like Carranza, Villa refused to give up. He decided to try to start a war between Mexico and the United States. Pancho Villa wanted the United States to attack Carranza. Then he would step in to lead Mexican forces in battle. That would make him a hero. With this plan in mind, Pancho Villa attacked an American town across the border in Texas. He killed 19 persons.
President Wilson immediately ordered a large American force to find and punish Villa. At first, Carranza welcomed the move. Villa was his enemy. He wanted him captured. Then Carranza began to fear that the American troops might threaten his government. He demanded the withdrawal of all American soldiers from Mexico. Tensions increased between the two countries. Villa's forces attacked another town in Texas. President Wilson considered asking Congress to declare war. But the crisis cooled down before then. American forces were withdrawn, and the people of Mexico elected a new government. They chose Carranza as president.
As President Wilson dealt with the situation in Mexico, trouble began to surface in another part of the world. The crisis was in Europe. Tensions were growing between several groups of nations. They were on the edge of what would become World War I. The major powers in Europe had been threatening each other for years, but they had not fought for more than 40 years. Most Americans believed there would never be another European war. Such a war would be unbelievably destructive. Millions would die. No nation would win.
Europe depended on a balance of power to keep the peace. On one side were the Central Powers, Germany, Austria-Hungary, and Italy. On the other side were the members of the Triple Entente, Britain, France, and Russia. Each side made every effort to win the support of Europe's smaller nations. A number of nations refused to join either side. The neutrals included Switzerland, Belgium, the Netherlands, and the Scandinavian countries.
This political balance did not prevent the major nations from competing with each other for colonies and economic power. They competed all over the world, in China, in the Middle East, in Africa, everywhere money could be invested. Competition was especially sharp in the Balkans. This was the area of Europe between the Adriatic and Black Seas. Many nations claimed special interests in the Balkans, and several Balkan countries were fighting each other. The whole continent seemed ready to explode.
The spark that set off the explosion came in the city of Sarajevo. The date was June 28, 1914. Sarajevo had been taken over by Austria, and the Archduke of Austria, Ferdinand, had come for a visit. Ferdinand was expected to become the next Emperor of Austria. Seven young extremists from the area decided to assassinate the Archduke to protest Austrian control. One of the extremists threw a bomb at the royal family. The bomb missed its target, but another extremist shot at the group. He killed both the Archduke and the Archduke's wife.
The assassinations in Sarajevo started a series of events that quickly brought war to all of Europe. Soon, the continent was covered with armies, battles, and death. The war in Europe forced President Wilson to face the greatest crisis of his presidency. That will be our story next week, here on Learning English Weekend, the Sunday edition. Well, that's our program. We hope it has informed and entertained you, and has helped you learn everyday American English. We'd like to hear from you. Send us an email. Our address is learningenglish@voanews.com. You can also send us a message through our website. Just go to learningenglish.voanews.com and click Contact Us. While you are there, you can read, listen to, and download our programs. You will also find podcasts, captioned videos, and lessons to test your English skills. However you reach us, please know that we do read every message you send us. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz, reporting from Washington. For all of us here at VOA Learning English, thanks for spending some time with us today. I'll be back tomorrow at this same time to help you learn everyday American English with As It Is Monday, the weekday Learning English broadcast, webcast, and podcast from the Voice of America.